Now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this November the 25th on the West Coast, now November the 26th on the East Coast and in the Central time zones. We would also like very much to welcome those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network, as well as blogtalkradio.com. And we want to send out a special, my mind and my lips, my tongue aren't synchronized. Like to send out a special Thanksgiving blessing and greeting to everyone in the U.S. military around the world. We have people in Russia, Australia, New Zealand, all over Europe, Central and South America listening to the show tonight. And I can guarantee you this is going to be a fascinating show. And that's Muse and Uprising. What a way to open the show. We don't often open Evident Footprints up to a song, but I feel this is going to become an anthem, as I already mentioned, and for the truth movement and people fighting to restore the basic precepts of our republic and our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and really our sovereignty under our Creator. With that, I would like to welcome for the first time to Evident Footprints the medical director of the Center for Advanced Medicine and Clinical Research in Huntersville, North Carolina. He is a graduate of the University of Osteopathic Medicine and Health Sciences, College of Medicine and Surgery. He trained in general surgery and emergency medicine and served as brigade surgeon and director of emergency medicine while serving in the U.S. Army. His name is Dr. Rashid A. Buttar, and we welcome you, Dr. Buttar, to Evident Footprints. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, Don. Thank you very much for asking me to be on the show.
My pleasure. Actually, many of my listeners were requesting that we have you on, and I had been doing some research involving this, what I call a phony swine flu, bird flu, human flu pandemic, and this whole nightmare of vaccination that's being promoted by the mainstream media and people in government, and of course many in the allopathic medical community. And I came across the story of your assistance in helping Desiree Jennings, the Washington Redskins cheerleader who had succumbed to the ill effects of receiving a flu shot. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell your story and tell people how dangerous these vaccines are, or anything else you may want to say about that, and speak about the general toxicity that we're subjected to in our food, our water, our environment, and in our minds. So wherever you'd like to begin would be fine with me.
Well, Don, let me first say that as you, I'm sure, or I don't know you that well. I've just heard of your show very recently, but I am very well aware of one of your friends, actually a couple of your friends, and it's interesting that, as you know, there are no such things as coincidences, so... Mm-hmm. One of the people that you've worked with who wrote Wrongly Accused.
Wrongly Blamed.
I'm sorry?
Wrongly Blamed, I think.
Blamed. I'm sorry. That's right. Wrongly Blamed. I had gotten a copy of that book given to me that less than 12 hours before you contacted my office about this interview.
Yes, I know.
It's just a very, you know, of course, you know, some people would say it's strange, but those of us that understand how everything works know that there's nothing strange about it. Actually, it was supposed to be that way. But and your previous associate, Mr. Harkins, also, I was very fond of some of his writings. So I appreciate being on the show, first of all. And secondly, I really enjoyed that song. I'm not also a big music fan. I, you know, rarely listen to music. I'm usually listening to other types of things, usually self-improvement type things or that type of stuff. But that was a great song. I really enjoyed it. I would like to start off by first and foremost saying that what you touched on about toxicity, this is my personal philosophy. This is something that I have postulated over probably now 11, 12 years ago. But we have actually now established this by video documentation over the last 11 years. And what this is that I'm about to say, some people may find this to be, I've been told this, irresponsible for making a statement like this, but I'm going to say it because this is what I truly believe. And that is that if you can effectively remove toxicity, if you can effectively detox, and the key operative word here is effectively detoxify the body, but if you can effectively detoxify the body, if you can effectively negate the toxicities that the body is being exposed to, there is no way that chronic disease can exist. It is absolutely impossible. There are seven toxicities, and these seven toxicities are the fundamental basis of all oxidative stress. And from this particular oxidative stress, which is a commonality between all these seven toxicities, is where chronic disease starts. I don't care if you're talking about cancer, you're talking about heart disease, you're talking about degenerative joint, diabetes, stroke, any type of chronic disease starts from one of these seven toxicities, and the pathology then progresses using with the underlying premise that the oxidative injury is the cause of the damage. And if you can effectively stop that toxicity and remove it, that particular chronic disease will negate itself.
Mm-hmm. That's what makes antioxidants so critical in one's diet then.
Absolutely. Antioxidants are very important, but there's one thing even more important than antioxidants, and that is the removal of the source of toxicity so that the body's own antioxidants can create the adequate buffer the way the creator designed the system. In other words, when we're taking antioxidants, we're trying to negate or reduce the oxidative burden from that toxicity. So the first thing we should do before even trying to take an antioxidant, because remember, if you take an antioxidant, yes, you're creating a greater buffer, but the problem is still there.
Yeah.
So the first step should be that you should get rid of the problem, and then the second thing is to increase that buffer, if you will, which is created by that antioxidant.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't you find it rather ironic, Dr. Buttar, that in the automotive industry, they sell products that clean the valves and clean the injectors and clean the engine and lubricate the engine, and yet these medicines, these drugs that we see nonstop on the television and on the radio, hear on the radio and read in newspapers and magazines, never ever deal with the issue of toxicity or the cause of disease, and yet you can readily find out ways to clean out a car or a truck engine.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the analogy of cars, because for whatever reason, people really seem to understand those analogies. And in fact, I seem to be able to explain and express myself better when I use an analogy of a car, although I am not a car enthusiast or have any special knowledge of how cars work. But the point that you bring up is very, very pertinent. It's an excellent way to actually express how a pharmaceutical or a drug works, where a person, if you follow this analogy, if a person comes in with a car and they've got a knocking sound and they tell the mechanic, hey, I've got this knocking sound in my car engine, and the mechanic says, oh yeah, I hear it, and goes into the car and turns up the radio and then says, do you hear the knocking sound now? The
yeah.
person would say, well, yeah, I still do. And they say, okay, here, put these earmuffs on. Now do you hear it? And the person says, no, now I don't hear anything. That's how pharmaceuticals work.
Mm-hmm.
They come in and they cover up the symptom. And the problem is still there. It's like having a horse manure in your living room. You can throw a carpet over it and you can spray some air freshener, but the horse manure is still there. It's more effective if you take that horse manure out. So the car analogy really comes home because, you know, people really get this thing with that red light on the dashboard blinking. Mm. And if you're if your mechanic was to take out the fuse of that flashing red light that tells you that there's something wrong with your engine, what would you say about that mechanic?
Oh, I'd have quite a bit to say. I don't know if I could say it on the radio.
Well, exactly. So, you know, people would say, obviously, a logical person would look at the mechanic in amazement, like, you know, you haven't fixed anything. You just covered up, took out the fuse of the flashing light, the warning light. And that's how we treat people in modern medicine. It is one of my greatest frustrations with the profession of medicine. It is one of the reasons that our healthcare system is declining so rapidly. We're the 34th in the United States, now the 34th nation as far as healthcare is concerned. And the primary reason for that is because we rely upon substances that inhibit reactions, that block symptoms, that cover up symptoms, and basically blunt us of realizing what the body is experiencing. So when a person has pain or they have discomfort or they have, any type of negative response, it's the body's mechanism, that flashing light, warning us that something's wrong. And the last thing we should be doing is going around covering up that flashing light. We need to be aware of it and then do something to create a balanced situation at the source of the problem and deal with the problem at its core, as opposed to dealing with the symptom, which is nothing more than that flashing light, that warning light.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I appreciate your acknowledgement of that metaphor. In terms of, if we take this just one step further, in terms of allopathic medicine, the average doctor out there, and I've got some medical specialists in my family. My late cousin invented the St. Jude's valve, and it saved many, many lives. And on the side, he performed over 10,000 gratis surgeries in China alone to many indigent people over the span of his career. And he worked at St. Jude's Medical Center and became very wealthy because of his inventions. And he had some that he had been fighting with the FDA for some 14 years and died not having achieved some of the new breakthroughs that he had invented and was trying to get onto the market. He and I, and I have another cousin who is a cardiologist, and we talk about the medical community in general, and it seems that there's a predisposition to sell drugs before anything else. In other words, the patient complains about a problem. Okay, I have to give you this drug. Take this and let me know in a week or so how you're feeling, if you're doing better. If not, we have to give you this drug here. It's sort of like selling car covers to the people that already have the lights disconnected. the warning lights.
Right, exactly.
Exactly what it is. And it's masking. It's really masking the problem. It's not, as you've already explained, it's not addressing the issue. What are your thoughts on that? And I don't mean to make you feel uncomfortable having you speak about that, but it's a reality. So,
it doesn't make me feel uncomfortable at all. In fact, it makes me feel very comfortable because, at most in most venues, if I start talking about this, sometimes people may get uncomfortable because of what I'm saying. But I'll tell you that the question that you're asking me in my comment is very simple. In fact, it's one of the things that, logic, just simple logic dictates that we are going in the wrong direction. I'll give you a couple of facts so that your listeners can also now understand that when people talk about, as you and I are talking about, it's not just opinions. These are simple truths that fulfill all the criteria of basic sequential logic. So if we give a person a drug is designed to inhibit a reaction, to block a reaction, to stop something in the body from happening.
Mm-hmm.
A drug does not enhance or open up a pathway. It doesn't enhance a reaction. So nutritional supplements, antioxidants, herbs, vitamins, minerals, etc., they act to enhance pathways. Drugs act to inhibit pathways. This is a general statement I'm making, but this is how the system is designed. Pharmaceuticals block pathways. Now, you and I may be smart enough to understand how blocking one pathway can have an implication on the second pathway downstream, or maybe even the third pathway.
Yes.
But there is no way that people understand the implications all the way down. So my question to you is, how many reactions do you think are going on in the human body at any given moment?
Any idea? I would say there's probably billions going on.
Well, let me give you the exact number. There are 70 trillion cells in a person that weighs 155 pounds. So a 70-kilogram person has 70 trillion cells. That's a rough estimate. Each cell per second has over 100,000 reactions taking place. That's 100,000 reactions per cell per second, and you've got 70 trillion cells in your body, assuming you're 155 pounds. Now, we can't even tell which way the market's going to go up or down. That's two choices. How are we going to know what taking a drug, what kind of implication that is going to have on these 70 trillion times 100,000 reactions times however many seconds there are in a 24-hour period?
I think the Federal Reserve could probably answer that question.
Yeah.
But, no, I get your point. I was only a comma and three zeros off.
Yeah. And that, but see, you were talking about, we were talking about the number of reactions. You were a comma and three zeros off from the number of cells. Now take that times 100,000.
Yeah.
That's just per second what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how many trillion to the what power, you know?
Exactly.
It's a huge amount. It's incomprehensible, and yet one single drug can interfere with all of those processes going on at the same time and creating, as you were describing, downstream another issue and another issue and another issue, because they're compounded over time, I would guess.
That's correct.
It may, you know, a vaccine that a newborn infant is given may not really show any adverse effects until that individual reaches adulthood and maybe the golden years, you know, which we see in Alzheimer's in many people today. We didn't have those problems years ago. So I'm just sort of ranting here, I guess. But the point you're making now is that removing all of this toxicity, it must have a procedure that's, let's say, safe in the sense that it acknowledges the progression of a disease and what may be masking that disease in terms of what medications a person had been taking to cope with pain or discomfort or the many neurological problems that happen.
Well, yeah, and we're talking about the whole system here, so we're not just localized to the neurological system, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Let me
as an example, we'll say.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Let me back up for a second and kind of go over, you know, what constitutes a toxicity. So we have seven toxicities. This evolved from my original premise where I started from, and that first one was heavy metals, and that's what I had been exposed to, not literally, but had been exposed to in my career as I was evolving as a physician. I've been a physician now for 19 years. I graduated from medical school in 1991, so just got into that 19th year of practicing medicine now. But what's interesting is that the heavy metal aspect was my first realization of how we are dealing with a toxic world. In fact, we have a DVD called Heavy Metal Toxicity, The Hidden Killer. And I really believe that this is a huge endemic issue that has virtually been ignored, in fact, in a very blatant manner by the medical profession. Now, heavy metals was where it started. But then we had certain people that would not get better, even though we effectively addressed their heavy metals. And I realized that the second problem, the second toxicity, is the persistent organic pollutants. And the reason that they're called persistent is because the body can't get rid of them. And I'm going to go through this very quickly, so just for the listeners so they understand what these toxicities are. The third toxicity actually is what I call the opportunistics. I refer to that as the opportunistics, the third toxicity, because they actually need an opportunity in order to manifest themselves. And what I mean by that is that the third toxicity, the opportunistics, is actually categorized by the bacteria, the virus, the spirochetes, the mycoplasma, the yeast, etc. And this is something that actually modern medicine has relatively effectively addressed, but they haven't addressed why a person gets a bacterial infection, viral infection, candida, etc., etc. Well, I call them opportunistics because that toxicity needs the environment to be optimized in order for it to manifest itself. So what I'm saying is that the first toxicity, the heavy metals, and the second toxicity, the persistent organic pollutants, cause an immunosuppression. The immune system becomes suppressed that allows for that third toxicity to manifest itself. So now when you get into all the different types of infections and the Lyme's disease and all this and that, because if a person has a good intact immune system, you're not going to really have an issue from that opportunistic standpoint, from that opportunistic basis. So we've got the first one, heavy metal, second one, persistent organic pollutants, and the third one, the opportunistics. Now, that basically comprises the first three toxicities that are objective, that can be measured. Now we get into these are the more tangible ones. Now we get into the more esoteric ones that are not necessarily as measurable. So the fourth toxicity here is the energetics. When I'm talking about energetics, I'm talking about everything from electromagnetic radiation, microwave energy, cell phone, the ambient radiation given off from cell phones. There's many different components of the energetic toxicities that we're exposed to. The fifth one is the emotional, psychological one, and that actually, I believe, is the most significant and probably the least recognized toxicity. In fact, dealing with all stage 4 cancer patients, I found that unless that fifth toxicity is effectively addressed, the patient will end up dying exactly when their oncologist told them that they're going to die. Why is it that one person with stage 3B cancer and well-controlled, not that bad, all end organs are still functioning fine, and that person ends up dying, and yet you have exactly, by the way, when the oncologist thought that they would die, versus somebody with stage 4 cancer, end stage disease, with multi-organ failure, livers failing, kidneys failing, and yet that person, given 6 months to live or 4 months to live, lives to that 6 months, lives to a year, lives to 2 years, lives to 5 years, 5 years later, has no trace of cancer in any of the metastatic sites. Why did that stage 4 cancer patient with end organ failure end up surviving, and the stage 3B that didn't have the end organ stage failure, why did they not survive? It all comes down to that emotional psychological component, where I believe that toxicity is the most prevalent that almost everybody's dealing with, and yet it's never addressed by modern medicine. Mm-hmm. So that's the fifth toxicity. The sixth one is food. And when I'm talking about food, I'm not talking about the things that are in food, because those are usually covered by the first toxicity, the heavy metals, and the second toxicity, the persistent organic pollutants, and sometimes even the third one, the opportunistics. What I'm talking about and the sixth toxicity when I'm talking about food is a genetically engineered food. What we're talking about, the irradiation of food, the manipulation of the genetic material that we're ingesting, and how it either for under the premise of protecting the public, so we're cleaning the food, versus more effective methods of growing and genetic modification of the food, the implications on our biological system, we have no idea what those implications are. And so we're dealing with a huge variable, a huge unknown, that can have tremendous detrimental consequences downstream. And then the last toxicity, the seventh toxicity, is a spiritual toxicity. And, on I used to put the fifth one and the seventh one together, the emotional, psychological, spiritual, but a few years ago came to a realization that there are many people that are emotionally, psychologically toxic, but spiritually they're not. Or they're spiritually toxic and emotionally, psychologically, they're not. So, in fact, if it's okay with you, I'd like to give your listeners a resource that they can get some more information on this, if that's all right.
Oh, absolutely. You don't have to ask permission for any of that.
Okay.
We have no censorship here, and you can say whatever's in your heart.
Well, I appreciate that. The website is called Facts on Toxicity. That's FACTS, Facts on Toxicity, TOXICITY.com. And it's a website that is completely free. It doesn't cost anybody a single dime. There are 9 videos. They're all between 10 and 15 minutes long. And basically it goes into the 7 toxicities and talks about oxidative stress and explains exactly what's happening to the body when they're exposed to these 7 toxicities, and then has documentation showing in people's own words, where people are telling their own story, and how by addressing the 7 toxicities effectively, we were able to eradicate all these and even worse diseases. So the listener has a resource that they can go to, and all we ask in return is that if you find it to be beneficial to yourself, pay it forward and pass the information on. We've had some really incredible stories that have come back to us from people saying that how grateful they were for these videos and what it did for them personally and for their, you know, relatives, for their loved ones, etc. So it's our way of trying to help make the change the world's waiting for, and that's our motto in my office, is to make the change the world's waiting for. And so hopefully somebody will benefit from that information.
Not the same change we were promised in the last election, I take it.
No.
With your permission, I don't know if this is possible, but I would be happy to post these videos on my website or just the links. You tell me, because I get a lot of traffic.
Sure, absolutely. Whichever way you would like to do that. I think the first 3 videos, a person doesn't even have to register to watch them, but then I think the 4th one, we ask for a person to register, which basically is just their email and their name. Mm-hmm. And I think it also asks for the country that they're from. And you can, I think the first 3 are downloadable, so you can embed them. But basically, you just go register yourself, and there's a place that you can actually download those first three videos and put them up anywhere you'd like, and you know, pay it forward.
Okay. So what we need to do is get Barack Obama to watch the first 3, so he'll watch the 4th one, and then he's got to tell us where he's from. Boy, we can solve a lot of problems with these.
Yeah, well, the videos actually, it helps a person understand the fundamental premise of how disease starts. And then once we understand how disease starts, then we can actually figure out an effective way of how to address it. But the problem is we never look at the cause of what's creating the issue in the first place. And so it's very difficult if you don't understand the cause to effectively have something that would negate the problem in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Now, in my research, and I should tell you, I'm not anti-music. In fact, I'm a professional musician and composer. It's just that I don't always open my show with a song. That was the reference to that.
Sure. No, and actually, I'm not anti-music either. I love music. Yeah. I just don't find too much time to listen to it. But I think music is... In fact, it has a lot of healing benefits, too.
Yeah, and maybe before the end of the show, we can touch upon that a little bit, because I've done a lot of research and a lot of music. I've produced a lot of music in that area with the specificity of applying it to the types of modalities that you're speaking about.
Okay.
I think that's the best way for me to describe it.
Sure.
So that I keep the hounds of Baskerville off of me.
Okay.
In the course of my research, and I've been doing a lot of genealogical research on historical political figures, mm-hmm. and I've found some really interesting things along the way, because you get into people who were working with the CIA or working with certain companies in the food manufacturing business, and I found that even in the 1940s, and probably even before that, but I'm finding with great specificity the names of the companies and the people involved in the vocation called food chemistry,
mm-hmm.
where they're maybe taking peanuts and turning it into peanut butter, mm-hmm. or taking grains and turning it into some sort of snack product. And there's probably a lot of hidden alchemy going on with that. I don't know what your experience is in that area, but it is something that I'd like to touch upon, because, you know, we hear, well, eat fresh vegetables and eat fresh fruits. And I know that fruit juices aren't necessarily good for you in the normal strength that they're in, that you could actually dilute them with water and do yourself much more good than you would to drink it straight out of the bottle. They say 100% fruit from concentrate. And then I say, concentrate? What's in concentrate?
Yeah, exactly.
They use these terms to mask what they're doing. And, you know, we all hear about monosodium glutamate and the different sodium compounds that end up in our food. You know, it contributes, and I don't want to take you out of the sequence of, you know, this progression of the talk, but it is an area that I think the listeners would enjoy hearing the straight scoop on what types of foods are not healthy for us and actually either contribute to the toxicity or act as triggers for that, you know, that system, allowing the system to further deteriorate because it's not, the body's not getting the proper nourishment and in fact, probably becoming more toxic.
Well, the question that you're asking, it's probably beyond the scope of this show, but it is, I have a DVD called The 9 Steps to Optimum Health. In fact, it's the subject of a book that's going to be released in April,
mm-hmm.
Called The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. And there are 9 different steps. The very first step is actually nutrition. And we go into the details on nutrition and basically debunk a lot of the myths behind what you hear on radio and TV and a lot in the popular media.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I tell all my patients is that think of G good, you know, G is for good food versus mad food, M for mad food. And here's my way of explaining this. If God made it, remember G, God made it, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
If man made it, it's madness. And so we need to, if a person just goes by that, they're going to be far better off than 99.9% of the population. So let me give you a couple quick examples.
Sure.
Margarine. Margarine is made by man. It's not natural. Butter is natural. So when people say, well, my doctor said not to eat butter because it's fattening and to eat margarine, that's absolutely ludicrous. Butter is made naturally. It's completely assimilable in the body. Margarine is like ingesting liquid fat. It's like a plastic, liquid plastic. It's like taking a plastic bag and putting it over your head and then trying to expect to breathe. That's what it's doing to your cell membranes. It's actually changing the lipid structure with the trans fatty acids. And there's no way for the cell to function. There's no communication. It's essentially causing suffocation of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at these examples. Anytime you're picking up anything to eat, read the label. And if there's more than 2 ingredients that you don't understand what it is and it's a chemical structure, my suggestion is to put it away. Put it down. Leave it alone. If it's something that can be stored for, you know, a year, 2 years without refrigeration, or, you know, I would be very, very cautious with that kind of stuff. Now, there may be certain things that are cans, you know, and they may not have any preservatives. They may just have, you know, 1 preservative something. Okay, maybe that's okay. But my goal would be to eat fresh, range-fed, natural meats, grains, whatever you're going to eat, that it's naturally man-made methodology that is abstained from, and that the God's design, the stuff that God designed, we use and we ingest. For instance, you know, you take wheat. If you have regular wheat, then you eat regular wheat, you're fine. But if you take fortified wheat, you know, the wheat flour, where they take all the good stuff out and then they re-fortify it with vitamins and minerals, I mean, this doesn't make any sense. You know, they're taking everything out, all the nutrients out, and then put back in what they think is important. That's just not a smart thing to do. So hopefully that gives you a general, maybe a general framework. And I can tell people how they can get more information on this type of subject and on these 9 steps that I believe are fundamental, basic things that one must address in order to have any chance of recovery. And we've had between 75% and 80% of ailments that people complain about alleviated just by people making lifestyle changes that incorporate these 9 steps. And it's actually the foundation of what we do in our practice to help people get better. So these 9 steps are fundamental to every human being. But if a person comes in, they're chronically ill, we make sure that they're doing these 9 steps, and then upon that, we build our treatment plan to help them to recover. But these 9 steps, they're fundamental. Everybody on the planet should do them. It's something that I do on a regular basis, and it's something that I believe that if you don't do on a regular basis, you are going in the wrong direction, and you're actually in a course, in a path that's diverging from good health.
Yes. Well, I don't feel so bad about bringing it up. My thinking is that, number one, if we are following these 9 steps as you're describing it, before illness arrives, illness probably won't arrive.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So that's the step that the healthy person can take. And certainly someone who is suffering from some malady certainly could take that approach. However, you might deal with that differently because of the toxicity issue and removing the toxins.
Well, that's right. In the toxin issue, the toxicity issue is something that comes into when a individual has. By the way, we're all to some degree toxic. Uh-huh. These 9 steps are actually separate from the toxicity issue. These are the fundamental foundations, if you will, and then the toxicities. And those type of things, that's more the steps for the doctor to follow to eliminate those toxicities. And it's important for the patient or the person that is undergoing treatment for them to understand that framework. But these 9 steps are nutrition, supplementation, exercise, water, abstinence from vices, that's the 5th one. Relaxation, stress management is number 6. Number 7 is prayer, meditation. Number 8 is laughter. And number 9 is a specific method of physiological enhancement. And so those are the 9 steps, and we go into a lot of detail. In fact, right before you contacted me this evening for the radio show, I was actually on the 9th step. I was actually editing the 9th step because it has to go back to the publisher, to the editor, for them to clean everything up. So I was going through that again. And the book's going to be available in April. I think it's going to my purpose in the book, and I've been asked to write this book for, I don't know, 8-9 years now, but I love trees. I guess you could call me a tree hugger, and I didn't want to write a book that people were going to cut down a bunch of trees and nobody would read it. And so I just never got around to writing it, but now there's such a demand for it, and it's really funny. We've already sold, I don't know how many books we've already sold, and they haven't even, you know, they're not going to be available till April. So it's been a pleasant surprise that there's such a demand for it, but we've got the introduction in the first chapter actually online at a website that people can read it and pre-order the book.
Yes. Well, we'll make sure we give all that information out. You can give it out now if you want.
Well, okay, great. In fact, there's a special thing that we've got going on till the end of the year, till December 31st, and I'll kind of mention that if that's okay. The website is the9steps.com, and that's T-H-E, and then the number 9, not N-I-N-E, but just the number 9steps.com, the9steps.com. And at that website, the book is like $23.95, but if somebody orders a book, they can get one of our 6 DVDs, and there's one on cancer, there's one on autism, there's one on heart disease, there's one on heavy metals, one on trans-D, one on one is the 9 steps to optimum health. And these DVDs, they retail for $89.55, almost $90 at Amazon, at eBay, medicalseries.com. There's a bunch of different websites that actually carry these DVDs. But if anybody orders a book, which is, again, less than $24, you get a DVD for free. So we've had a lot of people ordering, and this is a second little promotional thing we did till the end of the year. We've had a lot of people ordering the book because they can get the DVDs for free, so it's a no-brainer type of thing. So exactly. If somebody wants a full set of DVDs and you just order 6 books, we've had some people order 20, 30 books because they've said that, you know, it was the best gift that they could think of to give on to their loved ones. But the details are on that website, and you can see a copy of the cover of the book and some celebrities that have already, reviewed the book, and then all the details are there too. And actually the introduction chapter and the first chapter are available for download, so a person can download them and actually read that to get an idea of what the book's about.
Great. Yeah, I'm on the site right now looking. And I have to say, you seem to be in remarkable physical shape.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
I would hate to meet you in a Greco-Roman style wrestling match. I admire people that take care of themselves. I've been very disciplined myself about that. Long distance running, yoga, martial arts, all of those things. And
that's excellent.
Meditation and prayer is very important as well. In fact,
Absolutely. Most
of my musical inspiration comes from there. And I can sort of put or link together this concept of vibrations. You know, there are no coincidences, are there?
Absolutely not.
And that resonates with me when you know, to hear you say that. That's certainly something that you become aware of when you're outside the box and thinking of, solutions to problems, which I deal with all the time. I mean, I have a lot of people that ask me on these shows, how do we do this or what are we to do? It's almost like this toxicity and all of this control, which is intentional, I feel very strongly, and I'm sure you'd probably agree. This is done by design, is intended to keep us at a lower vibration where we will succumb to illness. And the things you're talking about are the opposite. They tend to put us in the opposite direction.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say health maintenance and healing definitely is a part of that. But, the maintenance of the immune system and all the tangential effects that has on every aspect of our lives. I don't think God, in his perfect creation, intended for us to slide so far down the ladder. You know, I think in a sense we're designed to be moving upward and to be expanding in our consciousness and in our experience and in our contribution to the universe. And we seem to be on this path where none of that's being honored, and of course we dishonor who we are and we dishonor our Creator at the same time.
Well, I would disagree with one thing that you said, and that is the increasingness. That's probably not a word. The increasing consciousness, I think, is actually occurring.
Oh, it is. But I'm saying the intention of those that devised all these methods is
sure
to keep us from being conscious.
I think that you're probably right on there. I try not to deal with too many of the political issues, simply because as my message is so radical anyway that I probably need to abstain from bringing up too many other radical thoughts. But I agree with you completely. I think that, you know, when you start looking at certain things like the second most toxic substance known to man being put into a more assimilable formation, if you will, like mercury, second most toxic substance known to man, inorganic mercury, and then you put it with a methyl group or an ethyl group, and now it's more assimilable in the system, and then you inject it into the newborn children as a preservative, you know, and knowing what the detrimental effects of the substance are by reviewing the material safety data sheets off the pharmaceutical companies that actually manufacture these things, you know, at some point you have to ask yourself, why would anybody do this? It just doesn't make any sense. The information is out there. It's very blatant. It's not like it's subtle information. The evidence is overwhelming. When people say that there's no evidence, it's like, are you blind or are you stupid or are you both? Because you have to be blind and stupid not to understand what the evidence is, because it's right there in front of you. Mm. Even to the point that the University of Calgary has documented the detrimental effects of mercury, including the denudation of the neurofibrils, which mercury is the only metal that has been able to show how that occurs. In fact, on the Facts on Toxicity website that I talked about on the first or the second video, you will see, as you're watching the video and I'm explaining things, you will actually see what mercury does to brain tissue. I mean, you will see it, and it's not my information. It's from the University of Calgary. We got permission from them to be able to put this together, and so you'll be able to see it. It's their video footage.
Yes, that's exactly what I was referring to in the sense of holding our consciousness down by attacking the various systems. Now, consciousness isn't necessarily something that resides in the brain, but the brain is much like the co-processors of a computer system. If it's malfunctioning, the whole computer suffers. And
right.
And you know, I personally, my experience tells me that the seat of consciousness in a human being resides in the heart, and that happens to be the place where all the major activity is going on in terms of supplying the body with life force,
mm-hmm.
and circulating it. You know, I'm being very elementary in that description, but it's the idea that they attack the brain cells. All these additives attack our brain cells, our nervous system, and our immune system. And how can the body fight or overcome the severing of these pathways, which is what you were describing before? And that's where your work comes in. You're actually reviving those or clearing out those pathways, aren't you?
That's exactly what our goal is.
Yes. And I don't mean sound like I'm the guy with coming forward with all the information here. I'm just trying to sort of direct this conversation that we can talk about these things, because there's this myth that if they tell you, and advertising is one of the most toxic ways of polluting the mind, by the way, through the power of suggestion and repetition of a message that doesn't even have to be founded in the truth at all. But just has a goal of being a means to an end, which is making lots of money at any cost, and without repercussions or without any accountability for one's actions. This is where politics gets into it, in the legalization of this stuff. That's as much as I want to give to the politicians. But this is done for big business. And, you know, we ask these rhetorical questions. What kind of people could do this to their own kind? You know, it's like a living nightmare that people now are being, they're either being told or they're literally being forced to take vaccinations from birth. And we're seeing deaths occur in a very short span of time. Someone calculated what the first 10 vaccines of a fairly newborn child would be commensurate to, let's say, a 180-pound man getting 30 vaccines. It's incredible. It's unimaginable what's being done. Then you wonder why the autism rate has risen so high, and even the denial that this is occurring. This is appalling that this is going on. Now, I guess at this point we should talk about solutions or, you know, ways that people can deal with confronting these issues. You know, the so-called pandemic, which we know there's so much information coming out now that this is not a pandemic. In fact, I published an article where IBM released information to their upper level management in France in 2006, predicting a pandemic that would occur within the next 5 years. And here we are at the midway point, or just a little past the midway point of the release of that document. And it's occurring just like they notified their employees. Their concern was to be able to quarantine people and keep the company running. There was no mention about how they might help people be healed or prevent, you know, the disease that was unnamed but just described as a pandemic, how they would prevent people from contracting that. And it's reared its ugly face. Now we know that they intend to do this both through vaccinations as well as biological weapons that are being dispersed over some countries. We know that for certain. Any thoughts on all this?
Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson, over 200 and some years ago, said, that when a people allow a government to dictate the foods that they put in their mouths and the medicines they take into their bodies, their souls will soon be in the same sorry state as those who live under tyranny. And the fact that our forefathers could predict the type of situations that would be occurring in our lifetimes, you know, 200, 250 years in the future, it's just amazing to me. And we have, on many different fronts, violated many of the safety clauses, the roadblocks, the speed bumps, if you will, whatever you want to call them, that our forefathers set in place to help us protect the Republic. Again, I'm a doctor. I don't get too much into the political arena. I mean, it's hard not to, but I try to refrain from it as much as I possibly can. But having been a soldier and having been in the situation where, you know, you fight for God and country, and then you come to realize that there's nothing godliness about what we're doing, and it's just something that's brainwashed into us. But a country that sends its own people into a combat zone with inadequate protective gear and experiments on their own soldiers by giving them various types of substances that may or may not have been studied adequately to determine whether or not they're safe, and then forget their soldiers, you know, when they come home, you know, that's not what I believe our country's about.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess maybe I should keep my mouth shut before I
well, my I often make the statement that if God intended us to have vaccines, we would have been born with a syringe in our rear end from the get-go.
Right.
You know, just
right.
Fill it up.
Yeah.
God
designed the system to be very adequate as far as the immune system is concerned. I mean, humans have been here for however many, depending on whatever a person believes, but, you know, thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, you know, possibly millions of years. Regardless of what a person believes, the immune system has been functional and has taken care of the human population up until the last, you know, up till 1991 when we had the National Vaccine Initiative that we started. Mm-hmm. And that National Vaccine Initiative has only served to take the incidence off, you know, it's not the only source of mercury. I want to make sure I specify that, but it certainly is a very large part of the mercury exposure that newborn babies get. And it's taken that incidence of autism from 1 in 10,000 in 1991 to over, to now I think it's 1 out of 91 children being born in the United States have autism. And
yeah.
That's a disturbing fact.
Yeah, I've heard it's even as low as 1 in 67. But
it's 1 in 58 in boys. It's 1 in 58 in boys, but it's overall boys and girls, like 1 out of 91 children now have it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my reason for bringing this up, right now the whole world is under this fear of, and I think on some level we know this, we perceive this anyway, it may be on an unconscious level, or it may be the higher self whispering in our ear, you know, don't get these vaccines. You're not being told the truth about the nature of the swine flu. We know that these vaccines were developed in Fort Detrick. We've done the studies. I've discovered links to people who are promoting the vaccine and the pharmaceutical companies. And I won't even use the names. I've talked about one particular individual that seems to be the sort of the banner waver or the flag bearer, if you want to say, for the pharmaceutical companies, setting up websites, putting out bogus figures of the number of people that have contracted the swine flu. And they're doing this here in this country as well. And these people are making money on royalties based on the technology that they've licensed to the pharmaceutical companies to produce these vaccines. And we're talking about like the ligand technologies that are used to cause these metals to bond with other substances. And, you know, we're told, oh, well, this is not going to hurt anyone. The mercury in this vaccine is not going to hurt a person. Yet Dennis, years ago, 20 years ago, were telling everyone to remove the mercury fillings in their teeth, that they were causing blood poisoning and other adverse health effects. So we have this hypocrisy going on right in the medical community itself, between the different branches of the medical community and right in the very areas, you know, where you're specialized. Although your approach is 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
Well, it's, you know, it's, not just the vaccines and the technology, but it's the contents of the vaccines and the various preservatives and the DNA adducts, and there's just so much in there. And as you said, that the links as to who developed them, why they developed them, the profit motives, all that, you know, all those things can be verified. But really, the bottom line comes down to is that we're dealing with a developing body, a developing brain, a developing system. And that developing system is very delicate.
Yes.
And when you start throwing in things into this developing system, not even understanding the fundamental aspects, or even perhaps maybe that's the whole problem, that they do completely understand the powers that be, and maybe that's what their whole motive is. I don't know. I don't want to get into that type of thing. I'm not necessarily prone to a conspiracy type thought process, but my point is that for anybody of reasonable intellect, what's being done is completely and utterly detrimental to the body. And it's hard to believe that somebody doesn't know what's going on because the evidence is so overwhelmingly blatant.
Yes. That's the basic point or premise that I wanted to establish. Now, if I may jump into another topic here, and this is along the lines of the vaccine and this miracle that occurred with Desiree Jennings, the Washington Redskins cheerleader who had gotten a vaccine. Could you share that story within your comfort level? You don't have to give a blow-by-blow account, but it's a riveting testimony that you gave. I think it was on the Robert Scott Bell radio show. And that was a fascinating interview, and your description is based upon these methodologies that you use. I would guess intuitively knew what to do, although you know quite well what these processes are. Can you give our listening audience a background on how this developed, this problem that she had, as much as, you know, you would be or she would be comfortable in sharing?
Well, she was training for a half a marathon and got the flu shot. She'd gotten the flu shot a couple times, once in 2007, once in 2008. It was not the H1N1 flu shot. It was just a regular seasonal flu shot. And within a few days, about a week or so, she started becoming ill.
This
and,
after the second shot, you're saying?
This was in 2000. This is just, well, she got a flu shot in 2007 and one in 2008, and she didn't really have any problems from that. She was fine.
Okay.
But then in 2009, when she got the flu shot, she got it at the end of August. And by the first couple of days of September, she started getting ill and basically had the symptoms of flu. And from there, started to first progressively slide downhill and then rapidly accelerated. Started developing seizures and tics and involuntary movements, and then she started having problems where she could only do certain things. She actually felt better when she ran. She's a runner, and she felt better when she ran, but the reason she was feeling better when she ran was because she was perfusing her brain, and her brain was basically, you know, there's an old saying in surgery, the solution to pollution is dilution. And so her system was polluted, and her brain was polluted, and so when she ran, it was creating more perfusion, and I was happy to dilute the toxin in her system, if you want to think of it that way, in her brain at least,
mm-hmm.
and feel better. But she started losing fine motor skills. She started losing her ability to think, her ability to read, cognition. Memory started to deteriorate, and then it just started affecting everything. So when she got to us, she could barely ventilate. I mean, she was in early respiratory distress and was, you know, rapidly deteriorating. She would go through bouts where she couldn't breathe 15 to 30 seconds. She would her system would go into spasm where she wasn't even able to ventilate. And it was a very disturbing situation to observe, because even though I have an acute emergent type background training, you know, to see a person like that in coming into the office with having 60 seizures a day coming into your office, you know, and not being able to breathe, you know, part of my brain was saying this woman really needs to be in a emergency setting. And but also part of me knew that if I sent her to the emergency room, the same thing that had happened the last four times she'd been in the hospital over the last month and a half would happen. And you know, she was getting worse each time. She was getting worse, and she actually, you know, told me, and she's on the Fox 5 News update that just was released a couple of days ago. She said that she knew she didn't have that much time. She told her husband, "I don't have that much time left," and she really didn't. The people that sent her to me basically, you know, they wanted to know what the chances were we could help her. And I told them very simply that if what I think is going on with her is correct, we should see results very rapidly. And if what I'm going to do doesn't help her, then what I think is going on isn't what the problem is, and it won't help her. And the rest of it, as I say, is history. She responded very quickly. I mean, she's got a long way to go before she's completely better. She can't read right now. This is a person who writes for a living. She can't read. She's a finance major, and she can't do simple problems like 13 plus 9. She cannot add that up. She can tell you what, you know, 4 times 4 is, or she can give you a multiplication that she memorized when she was a child. Memory type things prior to the event, prior to September 2nd when she got sick, she has no problem with that. But short-term memory, we've gotten her from about a 4 to 6 hour short-term memory up to about 28 to 30 hours now. But beyond that, from September 2nd, 3rd time frame till up to 30 hours before the present moment, she can't recall. And if she does, if she tries to think, you know, she starts going into a spasm. She will go into a seizure. She will, her voice will start to have the problem where she can't articulate. The fine motor skills will lock down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a corrupted hard drive that there was new data stored on, but because the hard drive is corrupted, it can't pull that information up. It can't read the data that was written to it during that time frame, because that's when the hard drive was corrupted. Subsequent to that, it's intact for a relatively short period of time, and then it starts to deteriorate, that memory part. But prior to September 3rd, you know, she can tell you everything. She has no problem recalling it. She can tell you, you know, her anniversary and what she did with her husband on certain days and everything. I mean, she's just, you know, completely mm-hmm. back there. And so, you know, and that's going to take time. It's going to take months to get her better. We documented her mercury levels, and they were very high. But, you know, she's a sick lady who, with the grace of God, has gotten tremendously better. But, you know, she's still, I mean, she told me last week, she said if she is like this for the rest of her life, she is so grateful, because at least she can function. You know, she's not having to fight to breathe. She's not having to walk backwards in order to be able to control having the seizure. She doesn't have to worry about sounds and lights and things causing her to go into seizure. And mm-hmm. Doesn't have to worry about that. She can eat now. She's not violently throwing up, and she's not losing weight. When she came to them, I mean, she's already a very petite person, but she had, in the first 2 days, she went from 104 pounds back to her normal of 115 pounds, you know, was able to, within 48 hours, she was able to start eating again and keeping it down.
Wow.
So, you know, there's a, as I said, she's still ill. She's still got a ways to go, but she's just a lot better than she was.
Yes. Now, in it's maybe difficult, or maybe you could pinpoint exactly what the cause was, but let's say if it were the adjuvants in the vaccine that you got, whether that's squalene or thimerosal or Lord knows what else might have been in there, it seems to have had an effect, sort of like a premature Alzheimer's effect, where maybe the synapses are either incapacitated or maybe totally disconnected, because short-term memory, isn't that the first? See, I don't even remember this myself. Maybe I'm suffering from Alzheimer's. It's like the old saying, well, the first thing that goes is your short-term memory, and I don't remember what the other two things are.
Right.
But not to make light of that, other than, you know, to just underscore that this is happening to many people, and many of these people are getting flu shots regularly, and it's not been attributed to that. But certainly, do you suspect that maybe it's the synapses in the brain that, let's say, deal with the issues of neuro-linguistic programming and comprehension along that line, and the motor skills going hand in hand with that?
Well, I mean, synapses are just the connections between the neurons, and certainly they're being impacted as the, you know, the neurons are being ripped apart, they're being denuded, there's all sorts of things going on. So it's not a, it's not necessarily a synaptic issue, but she basically had a neurological assault. You know, this neurological insult that she sustained is something that is analogous to any other type of head injury. You know, it could be she's actually going through the changes that you see a stroke patient going through, a post-stroke patient. In fact, right now, her sound, her ability to talk is completely back now. Her voice does not go in and out, but she speaks now in a different accent. And there's a syndrome called a foreign accent syndrome that actually is seen from in post-stroke patients as they're recovering. And she's exhibiting those types of changes. And again, these are very fine motor skills. And when a person's talking and how their tongue is being controlled, you know, those nerves are still off. And so to answer your question, you know, she had an encephalopathy, which is essentially neurological damage caused by whatever. And the fact that everything started after the flu shot, and the fact that she responded so quickly to what we did, and as I said, what I did would not have worked if it wasn't the flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
So when people have asked me, how do you know it's a flu shot? I'm like, because that's what I treated. And if she didn't have, if it wasn't from the flu shot, what I would have done, what I did would have done nothing for her.
Yes. I in listening to the interview that you did with Robert Scott Bell, I recall, I guess I'm getting rid of my Alzheimer's. I'm remembering this now.
Okay.
The whole procedure of turning this around spanned about a 36-hour period.
Not
completely, but in terms of your treatment, at least. I mean, you had mentioned at the out or the onset of your examination that you couldn't even examine her, that she would go into seizures just upon that. So I'm just trying to let the audience know what condition she was in. Obviously, if she can't breathe, if she's having seizures, that's one thing, but you couldn't even approach her from a diagnostic perspective.
That's absolutely correct. She was really, really... she was really, really bad off.
And now, can you, in basic terms, without giving away trade secrets, describe the sorts of things that you did to turn this around?
Well, I mean, there's no trade secrets. You know, I'm happy to share that with anybody. The problem is, you know, in the past when I've shared things, people will go out and start to try to do them themselves. Doctors have tried to go out there and do these things, and they didn't know what they were doing, and they've caused more harm than they've caused good. So I'm a little hesitant to go out and say it all the details, but essentially,
yeah,
from a philosophical standpoint, we first supported her system. We got her, you know, system to start flowing, the lymphatics, helping her system to stabilize, helped her to stabilize her breathing, and then we started focusing on addressing the components of the vaccine specifically. You know, she's gotten introduced with an attenuated virus, so we treated her for that, and we treated her for the heavy metal aspect. And then once she responded, you know, she did better, but then she was still having some problems that didn't make any sense why she would go back into that loop, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so we started addressing that loop and started dealing with the recovery aspect. So think of the first one as putting out the fire, the detoxification aspect, and then the second one was once the fire's out to start rebuilding the house. And normally, you know, in a child with autism, for instance, I won't address the recovery phase for at least a year. But in her case, she seemed like she was a perfect example of something that's compressed. So we saw many phases that the child goes through with autism, but we were able to see it in a condensed format, and she responded to the recovery protocol, you know, rapidly. Now, she's got a lot of mercury in her system, and we're treating that, and it's going to be an ongoing process, but she responded to the recovery aspect, which helped her to stabilize. And that recovery aspect is giving certain treatments that are oriented and directed towards repairing the neuroreceptors in the brain and to rebalancing the brain chemistry, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Now, you referred to autism a few times. Have you had some experience working with autistic patients?
Yeah, well, I assume that's a rhetorical question, or are you just asking that for the purposes of your listeners?
My listeners.
Yeah, we've treated well over 900 children, probably approaching 1,000 kids now. We've had remarkable success. In fact, if anybody wants to see their success we've had, just Google my name and autism, and you'll find some people think I walk on water, and other people think I'm the biggest scumbucket that ever lived. But the people that think I'm the biggest scumbucket have been actually found out to be three people with multiple aliases coming from the same IP address. Mm. And, you know, they're probably paid to, you know, say negative, detrimental things, whatever you call it.
Disinformation out there, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
That's exactly what we deal with, or I deal with this, you know, on a regular basis every time I come out with a new article.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm revealing things that aren't supposed to be revealed, like the truth, for instance.
It's pretty amazing how that works out, isn't it? That people that are spreading the information to the truth, as you said, get land blasted.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it sort of throws a wrench in the works.
Yeah.
And of course, there are billions of dollars invested in many of these programs. You mentioned margarine. Margarine, as I understand it, is basically like one molecule away from plastic.
Yep.
And we're ingesting this. And of course, plastic is a byproduct of the petroleum industry. So there's a lot at stake for those that have been controlling the world with these creations that really are destructive in nature. So your work is basically undoing all the interference with the natural systems that the Creator gave us.
And that is correct. It's you know, our goal is to get the garbage out and just protect the system, as you said, the way, you know, God designed the system to work.
Well, you know, on behalf of all those listeners out there that I know would just like to thank you for your work and for what you're doing for mankind in general, you know, I have to extend my congratulations for your success, not just in Desiree Jennings' case, but that in and of itself is an ongoing miracle as I see it, and many others I've talked to feel the same way. You're going to be getting a lot more exposure. You have people on your side, believe it or not.
I appreciate that. You know, I would ask you and your listeners to just keep me in your prayers, you know, and your intentions, and you know, that's the most important thing I think anybody can do for me.
Yes. Now, there are some strange diseases out there. There's one that we have, you know, as an intuitive, I attribute Morgellons disease to the chemtrails. There are so many metals and so many viral substances that have been inserted into these chemtrails, and samples have been taken all over the world. And you find things like desiccated blood in there, for example, and you have to ask yourself, what would cause somebody to spray desiccated blood from the skies? Or the nanoparticles, the polymers, and the barium compounds, or, you know, aluminum compounds. Again, metals. These are things that people are breathing into their system. They are compromising the immune system, and setting us up sort of to be sitting ducks for whatever may be coming down the pike. Not that we intend to promote fear or to monger fear, but it's being done, and we can't pretend like it's not happening. There's plenty of proof. Have you studied Morgellons at all? Are you familiar at all with the symptoms? Which is being diagnosed, by the way, in hospitals as Lyme's disease.
You know, I am not familiar with that, and I'll tell you, I try to stay away from diagnosing anybody with any kind of disease, because it tends to make us, let me make sure I try to express this the right way. When we tend to start creating an issue with a label, then our tendency is to start treating that label, and I try to stay away from, you know, treating a label, because people aren't labels. And so, you know, we go back to, I'm a ATLS, Advanced Trauma Life Support, Advanced Cardiac Life Support instructor, which is how to deal with trauma patients and how to deal with cardiac patients, and you teach other doctors how to deal with this. And there's something that we teach in ACLS and ATLS and even PALS, Pediatric Advanced Life Support, where the doctors that are teaching doctors how to deal with this and nursing staff how to deal with this, we always say that when you get down to a situation where you don't know or you're not sure what to do, go back to the basics. Go back to the basic raw elements. Go back to the ABCs, which is airway, breathing, circulation. And so what I'd like to try to do is that when I have a patient that comes to me, and again, the average patient that's coming to us has seen 11 doctors before they come to us. So, you know, the one thing is that when you start to get to be well known in a certain arena, the good is that, you know, you have more patients coming, but the bad is that you're usually getting people that nobody else can fix. I mean, nobody understands what to do. And so it's, you know, you don't get the typical person, let's put it that way. You end up getting, you know, more difficult type cases.
Yes.
And so we've had a lot of people that have come to us where they just, nobody knew what to do, or nobody knew what was wrong with them, or they were told that there was nothing wrong with them. It was just all in their head type of thing. And what these people, you know, were suffering from was many times often attributed to in their head. You know, it was, I've even had patients that were given not only antidepressants, but actually neuroleptics to prevent, according to the doctor, to prevent whatever was going on in their head from getting worse. So,
that sounds rather insane.
it is. I mean, you know, if you or I were sick, bottom line is, if we're sick, you're going to be depressed. And so to say, well, yeah, you're depressed, well, of course the person is depressed. If you were sick, you'd be depressed too. But the answer isn't giving them an antidepressant. And then just because the patient is becomes agitated and says that, look, you know, you need to help me, the answer isn't to say, well, this patient is a little agitated and is a little psychotic, and giving them an antipsychotic drug. The answer is to, like, listen to them, you know, and try to figure out what's causing their problem. But too many times we end up this covering up the symptom, as we discussed in the beginning of the show, with a drug similar to taking out the fuse of the flashing dashboard light. So I try to go back to those fundamentals, and those fundamentals are, again, understanding that we're in a toxic world, what could be the toxicity that's causing the problem, alleviate the toxicity. And there's three specific foundations that I use before I institute my nine steps with patients. And those three foundations are a systemic detoxification, using the seven toxicity aspect to make sure we're effectively addressing those seven areas. The second one is immune modulation, because usually toxicity has suppressed the immune system, so then immune modulation. And the third one is physiological optimization. And what I have found is that when you systemically detoxify the individual, when you enhance the immune system, and then you finally optimize the physiology, more often than not, we get absolutely stellar results, results that would be considered in mainstream medicine to be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we don't get the stellar results, we still get far better results than our conventional colleagues do.
Yes. Now, I've interviewed Dr. Richard Charles Norton on this show a few times during the past year, and he was sort of set up to take a fall, because he was exposing the fact that OxyContin was being sold on the street, sort of like other illegal drugs were being sold. And it was at a very, very high rate, and it's an extremely addictive product. And he had actually been imprisoned. He was set up, basically. We won't go into all the details. And while he was in prison, it dawned on him that there wasn't an efficient definition of addiction. There wasn't an addiction model that was a standard in the allopathic medical community, or in any medical community for that matter. And he got out of prison and actually won a court case over this. Now, is it step four that you were dealing, it was either four or five that you mentioned that you were dealing with the vices, getting rid of the different vices that people have?
Five.
Five, okay. The addictions.
Mm-hmm.
See, my Alzheimer's is going away. do you deal with that on a psychological level, or is it cross platform? Physiological, psychological. It seems to me that an addiction can occur on a multiplicity of levels. But certainly, if someone is given a drug to treat a condition, it may set them up, to become addicted to many things.
Absolutely.
Would you expound that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. To answer your question first and foremost, absolutely, we hit it on all the different levels. Not only is it a emotional, psychological addiction that we have to deal with, we also have to deal with, obviously, the physiological aspect, too. And it's a challenge, oftentimes, because even though the physiological aspect, for us, based upon looking at, again, the seven toxicities and dealing with it from the three foundation standpoint, we get great results, but then having to deal with the emotional, psychological component can be a real challenge. And then when you've got family members that, well-meaning, yet perhaps ingrained within the standard culture,
mm-hmm.
That are vested in the status quo, intervene, then it becomes even more difficult.
Yeah, it seems to me that all of these things that we're talking about, the adverse effects, have a foundation based in fear, do they not?
Absolutely, without a doubt. In fact, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because, if people were motivated, and you've probably talked about this on your show then, since you brought up this thing about fear, but
okay.
As you obviously know, there's only two root causes for any decision anybody has to make, and one is fear and the other is love.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you make a decision based upon fear, which incidentally is really funny if you think about it, because fear is totally an illusion. It's in our own mind. We created it.
Absolutely.
Or we allowed somebody else to create it.
Yeah.
If we make our decision, if we base our decision on love, you'll never go wrong. It'll most often be the harder decision to make and to take the path. It's usually the less traveled path. But if everybody did make a decision based upon love, you and I both know that this planet would be a totally different place
than yeah.
on Earth.
Yes, and that ultimate illusion is the fear of death.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And this, you know, every massive campaign to induce people to take, you know, medications that they really don't require, but are being marketed to them. They're even marketing disease now. I really cannot watch television, but I'll turn it on to see what they're talking about on the major news networks. That's part of my responsibility to veer towards the truth. I'm always anticipating hearing something truthful, and after 2 or 3 minutes, I have to shut it off. Usually because a pharmaceutical commercial will come on, and then they're identifying various maladies, RLS, restless leg syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
They manufacture these names, and yeah, there are plenty of people that probably have a difficulty in falling asleep or sitting still, and it probably bugs them to no end. Yet it's not because they have to have a drug to stop this. There's obviously quite a lot going on that needs to be addressed in the manner which you deal with these things. And you know, we want to eliminate the fear. I want to get to solutions. And that's much of what we do on the show. We point out the things that are the illusions. And you know, the person says, well, it's no illusion that I'm sick or that I'm suffering or that I don't feel well or I'm depressed or I have this problem. But the problems are not being addressed specifically at the root.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Good. I was saying you're absolutely correct. They are not being addressed at the root cause.
Yes, and you do that. And I'm sure there are many listeners out there that are thinking, boy, this is someone that I would like to talk to about my problem or about my child's problem or my parents' problem or, you know, someone in their life that they know.
Actually, can I, you know, this is your, you know, we obviously didn't rehearse any of this, but your timing of bringing up these questions is impeccable. I was going to actually tell you that we have a webinar coming up on December the 9th. There's no cost to it. It's completely free. And we had such an overwhelming response, we arranged to have, we doubled our capacity for the webinar. So we've got 1,000 people that we can host on this webinar. And it's basically a webinar where I'm answering questions. And what we've done is we've set up a site where people can ask a question. And the 21 most frequently asked questions we're going to address. And if there's enough time, then I'll continue to address other questions. But we're going to basically, because one of the things I've found is that most people have the same type of questions. And obviously I can't answer specifically, you know, my blood work is this, my heart rate's this, and, you know, what does that mean to my problem? We can't answer those kind of things, obviously. But the general questions, we will have that. In fact, can I give that website?
Absolutely. I want to offer you every opportunity to promote your work and solutions for problems that people have.
Well, I appreciate that. The website is actually, if you just go to my clinic website, which is drbuttar.com, and that's drbuttar.com/, and then go to, for after forward slash, just type in DJ. That's Delta Juliet, like Desiree Jennings, DJ. And you'll actually, people can see all the videos of Desiree that have been made public. And with the most recent one, there's a video. Don, you may want to watch that. The most recent video, nobody's seen yet. It's I was asked to address the National Autism Association about 48 hours. Actually, I was asked to come there 48 hours before I was supposed to be there, but I couldn't because I had my son and I competed in martial arts, and we had a competition coming up. So my son was vaccine injured, and my son's been written about in many books, and he's the youngest formal witness in front of the U.S. Congress. In fact, it's an interesting side story. I'll just mention really quick to talk about the powers that be. You know, my son is the youngest formal witness in front of the U.S. Congress, yet 3 different times when he has been when people have entered him into a timeline on Wikipedia on the history of autism, that particular entry has been flagged and removed in less than 2 minutes each time. The first time they said that there was no substantial information to verify it. And so, of course, the person who put this up, which was one of my ex-employees, they immediately linked it to the Library of Congress because it's a history of it's a matter of congressional record.
Mm-hmm.
And they, again, flagged it and removed it because they don't want anything that has been proven, like my son's injury. And, you know, when people ask me, is he normal? I'm like, there's nothing normal about this kid. I mean, he's extraordinary. You know, he's in fifth grade. He reads in a seventh grade level. He does math on a ninth grade level. He's the number one in the world right now in Taekwondo and forms, and number seven in fighting and sparring. He's exceptionally, you know, gentle and sweet. And, you know, so he's actually on the video, the National Autism Association, when we were going to do this pre-recording, my son and I were working out, and they came up, and one of my staff came up to record. And so it's kind of a cool video, but it explains a lot of things that people may not understand. For instance, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and people think hyperbaric oxygen therapy is this, you know, fantastic treatment for autism. It is not. We have found actually the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, remember that the metals cause their damage through oxidative stress. Well, when you put a person into 100% oxygen instead of 21% ambient air oxygen that you're in a normal room, you know, you're increasing the amount of oxygenation by over fivefold, which is going to increase the oxidative stress. Now, hyperbaric oxygen therapy after the metal has been removed is a different story. But we found that actually using hyperbaric oxygen therapy without oxygen, in other words, just the hyperbarics, which is one of the reasons that I do it, is just to increase the saturation of the tissue with the IVs that we're doing, but there was evidence that they'd actually reduced some brain inflammation. And this is, again, using hyperbarics without oxygen. So I go into some details on this video, and that's on that site, drbutar.com/ D as in Delta, J as in Juliet, or Desiree Jennings. Don't type in Desiree Jennings, just type in DJ like Desiree Jennings. And so you'll see all these videos, and the most recent one is the video for the National Autism Association, where I talk about her, and, you know, people can see my son. People haven't actually seen him on video since he was about 5. He's 10 now. He's almost 11. And right at the top of that site, Don, are you there on that site by any chance?
Yes, I am, actually. Yes.
You can see in the upper part, it says about the webinar.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where people can go. It's written in red, free vaccine injury and autism webinar with Dr. Buttar. And it's got the date there, and there's a link there to register. Just click there and register. And when you click there, the registration form will pop up. There's also another website. It's not a link, unfortunately, but it's a website where you can go and submit your question for the webinar if you want, or if you just want to attend the webinar, you know, you can just do that. So, yeah, I would appreciate the Don, if you want to, if you can spread that information about the webinar. We've had a lot of people contacting us, and
mm-hmm.
We're actually surprised how many people registered, but we doubled our capacity, and so let all the people that want to get on that webinar, you know, we'll be happy to provide them as much information as we possibly can.
Well, my show is archived on iTunes podcast at the Apple Store for free, and on my website, directlightproductions.com, under Evident Footprints. And I'll post this interview as well as a libretto of what we talked about, and I will put in bold letters at the top a special section announcing this with a link directly, you know, to your site.
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Other than that, we can only pray to the Lord that he wakes people up and brings them there. But certainly it's something that I would be also very interested in, too. And what time is that going?
I'd love for you to be on there.
Oh, yeah, I would. Oh, that's at 9 p.m. Eastern time on the 9th of December. 2009. Okay. I will be there.
Okay, great.
I will register.
Great.
Well, this has been fascinating. I guess, you know, we're dealing with a multiplicity of issues here. And for whatever reason, you know, these things are being carried out. Certainly, the Creator made us as perfect individuals, at least, maybe not in our decision making, We've all made poor decisions throughout our lives, but the general experience of life should lead us down the path of a higher consciousness. And I know that this is all frequency related, you know, that pollutants or toxins in the system lower the frequency, and removing them gives us the ability to raise the frequency, but we have to do the things that causes that. You know, making a person less toxic or eliminating toxins from their system is not going to make them a wiser person. They have to take the steps to move in the other direction. You know, they're at least you put a halt to the deterioration and destruction of the natural systems that really, if left alone, work perfectly.
That's exactly right. In fact, that's the key, leaving them alone. Unfortunately, because we live in a polluted world, it's hard to leave them alone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we try to go in and I've had, you know, a lot of people say a lot of nice things but about what our work, but really what it comes down to, I'm nothing more than a glorified trash man. I'm going to trash at the body.
Yeah. Well, that's a humble way to put it, but the impact it has on someone, anyone who's had a near-death experience, I've had two, actually, two NDEs where I've actually been to the other side, and I know that there's nothing to fear about death. And as soon as you can remove that fear or come to an understanding of where you're headed after this life, you begin to make your choices based on that understanding, and you tend to make wiser choices. There were a lot of people that don't even care to look at that. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, and you agreed with me wholeheartedly, the biggest fear is the ultimate one, and that's the fear of death. We don't understand really that it's just a transition from one state of being to another. And I think our state of being, or our lack of a state of being, is the big problem that we face during our lives here on planet Earth. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Well, that's the end of our show. No, I'm just
no, I mean, it's what you said, I mean, resonates truth, and I think anybody listening knows that it resonates truth.
Mm-hmm. You know, and again, going back to frequency, you know, the fear mongering or the actual application of these alchemic processes that are being touted as the answer to mankind's health problems, really keeps us in a lowered frequency. And yet music, there are other forms, art does the same thing, you know, things that you can take into your being, just through the eyesight, or listening, you know, to a motivational speaker, or listening to someone who is an expert on something and really knows what they're talking about. It's really bringing the truth forward, which is empowering to the individual. That raises the frequency. And I've been composing music for a number of years now, based on the modalities of addressing energy flow, prana, you know, or life force, building that up or allowing the person to receive it, because it's constantly flowing through us or toward us. Now, it runs into brick walls where there's, you know, excessive toxicity, where the body is not functioning like it was created to function. And really we have a multiplicity of ways that we can overcome these issues. Yet there's such a human cry to debunk or to disqualify those modalities or those that bring these forward. For example, if I were to guess, I would say that your work in a sense is a sort of chelation therapy, where you described it as you're the garbage man or trash collector.
Mm-hmm.
But
chelation is part of the modality that we use. In fact, I'm the chairman of the American Board of Clinical Metal Toxicology. So all the doctors that are doing chelation that are board certified, there's over 3,500 doctors in the country that do some form of chelation. There's only about 180 that are board certified, and I'm the chairman of that organization. That's about probably about 35 years old now, that organization. But absolutely, part of what we did was that chelation aspect. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I presume that that's in extreme circumstances, or is that also, is that a necessary component of what you do?
Actually, it's very commonly done in our clinic. And again, we're dealing with a lot of sick people, but we do that quite frequently. In fact, our basis of our treatment of children with autism is exactly that. We have literally hundreds of cases where the children are fully reversed, and we've got them on video. Sometimes these kids, you know, it only takes them a few months. Now, sometimes it may take 2-3 years, but sometimes it's been very short. In fact, we were just releasing 2 new videos. We've had 2 children so far just in the month of November that have had their original diagnosis of autism reversed by the same doctors that made the diagnosis. One, who was amazed and said, this child is no longer autistic, he's neurotypic. And the other one, the doctor said, well, I think my diagnosis, you know, it was an incorrect diagnosis. So one doctor gave the credit where it was due, the other doctor didn't. Well, actually, the credit is due only to God. But my point is that the one doctor, just instead of saying that, oh, my goodness, this is something remarkable, decided to say, well, I think I was wrong in my diagnosis. But chelation is a very fundamental part. And again, it's the first of the 7 toxicities. And to effectively remove that toxicity, you must remove, you know, the metals, the persistent organic pollutants, and then down the list you go to the opportunistics, the energetic toxicity, the emotional, psychological, the food, and then the spiritual toxicities.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to mention one thing here that I think is very important, and you touched on this, and I'm sure you've talked about this previously, because obviously this is not a subject that's new to you, but this, you know, fear-mongering in this place that we are in on this planet right now, the real reason that I enjoyed that song so much is because at one point the words in that song were, we will be victorious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's I feel that it's more real to me that we will be victorious than you and I talking right now. It's almost like I feel like I've been there and I've seen it, and we will be victorious. And what's coming is a great, I mean, the world's going to be a great place.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going through that. Really, on a universal standpoint on the planet, I think we're going through a detoxification, actually.
Oh, yes.
And so it's right along, you know, mm-hmm. the alley of our discussion right now. But I believe that that's one of the things that we really need to focus in on as a species, that, you know, you said that music and art will help us to fulfill us, to bring that out so that we're no longer in that low resonance, but in the higher resonance. And I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I would say the first place that we want to start is, you know, we empower ourselves with knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then once we empower ourselves with knowledge, then we expand ourselves using music, art, the positive motivational speakers. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm usually doing in my own life. That's one reason I don't listen to that much music, although I do listen to some music that is very inspirational. And I think that more and more people are doing that. And so I really, truly appreciate you bringing that up, because I think that's such an important thing for people to not only hear from those that are in a position of influence and spreading the truth, but also it's important for us to resonate at that frequency by simply extending that message.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your acknowledgement of that in me. You know, if I look at the various ways music is used, you know, you can play music and make people feel very patriotic, sort of devoted to their country.
Mm-hmm.
You can play music that causes people to go to war.
Right.
Play music that puts them to sleep, music that wakes them up, music that angers them, music that stirs the soul, music that heals, music that entertains, but, you know, it's a fine line as to where it's destructive, or it can be destructive based on the frequencies, and style has everything to do with that. Intonation, the international tuning standard, for example,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to, let's say, the sacred frequencies that that cause us to move outside the box, so to speak, outside the matrix. And then there's this aspect of the creative side of it, you see, because when we operate on a creative level, we are living, we are being, and we're moving forward, but we're expanding outward at the same time. I don't know if forward is necessarily the right direction, you know, because you could be moving sideways or backwards in a sense, but we tend to think of down and backwards as negative and upwards and forwards as positive. But it's all perspective. It's all based on our conscious mindset and our acceptance of what these things are without really considering them. So I'm speaking more about the creative, when I use motivational, I think inspirational is also important too.
Absolutely.
You know, I like to think I'm motivating my listening audience on a nightly basis to take some kind of action or proactive activity that's going to benefit them, which has a tangential effect on everyone else. And you expressed it very succinctly when you said love. Really, the Creator made all of this out of His love. And we seem to have turned away from that. So, I'm sure that anyone that receives the benefit of your consultation and your wisdom and your treatments is going to realize that once they escape the realm of what that does, because it sickness, illness is very destructive on a multiplicity of levels, at least the nine that you mentioned.
right.
And I'm just putting my two cents in here to give you the opportunity to make some closing comments here.
Well, I think that altogether, it's the topics that we've covered altogether. I think that this fear-mongering and being in a state of higher resonance and being motivated by love as opposed to by fear, I think that really is a very powerful place to start for an individual to understand what the truth is. And if we hold that true to ourselves, that we're always looking for how we can make the place, this place that we call planet Earth, a better place for those that are around us. And, you know, I'm not averse to making money. I think that, you know, God is a God of abundance.
Yeah.
But I also believe that I should provide a better service, or, you know, I should be provided a better product or better result than anybody else that's doing my work. And I think if everybody has the same attitude, I think that, you know, if everybody, if all journalists and if all news reporters and if all radio hosts had your desire, the same desire as you have to extend the truth and extend information that resonates at a high frequency, then just imagine the information that's being resonated, it's truth all around. And so it just helps to increase the frequency of the entire planet. And that's, I think, where the problem lies. And more people are now realizing this, and more people are trying to do that. And I think that the future is very bright.
Yes. Well, I thank you, and very well said. I thank you for coming on Evident Footprints tonight. I know you have a very busy schedule and you have to be up very early. Kimmy told me all about it. So,
yeah.
I really want to extend my utmost gratitude and appreciation for you appearing on my show. And I hope I can extend the invitation to you sometime in the month of December to give a progress report on your webinar and any changes that you see occurring.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Well, I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving and continued success. And our prayers will be with you in your work and to see you be acknowledged for the greatness that you bring to the medical community.
Well, I really appreciate those kind words. I really do, more so than you realize.
Well, I'm honored to have had you on the show, Dr. Buttar, and I look forward to the next opportunity to have a discussion like this with you. I'm sure I'm going to get flooded with emails and all kinds of questions, and I hope your phone rings off the hook.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I want to wish you a happy and safe Thanksgiving as well.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much, and I look forward. If there's anything that comes up that you want to let me know about, I'll be happy to post anything I can on my website, and I will get it to BBS Radio, too, as well.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you very, very much for hosting this and asking me to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, you too. Folks,
bye-bye.
You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. Rashid A. Buttar. You could go to his website at www.drbuttar.com. That's drbuttar.com. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio for broadcasting this show live and on an archive at a later date. And also, we'd like to express our gratitude to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick tonight on the sound. It was great tonight, Seth. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a very wonderful and safe and happy Thanksgiving, and especially all those in the U.S. military around the world. Come back quickly, come back healthy and whole, and we look forward to seeing you in the near future. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.